to NFL Live and happy Friday. We're so glad that you're with us. That's Dan Orlovsky. Marcus Spears, Mina Kimes are here. You guys, we've got a lot to do, so let's get right to the top news of the day. It's all about Tom Brady and Tampa Bay. And yes, they did finally have a real scrimmage. So it's only a scrimmage, but without preseason games, these are the things we get very excited about. You see Brady in Raymond James Stadium for the first time in a Bucs uniform, and he led three scoring drives, two of them culminating in touchdowns. We'll tell you if they end up winning their division in moments. Our other top story, the hits keep coming in San Francisco after losing Jalen Hurd for the season and seeing Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk injured at camp. Newly acquired wide receiver J.J. Nelson went down with an injury today. He's expected to miss 2 to 4 weeks. Our other top story, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson told 710 ESPN this morning that if the Seahawks had a game this week, they would not be playing, and they would have joined teams from the NBA, MLB, MLS, WNBA, and NHL in boycotting. This is the Seahawks' first, their first game, excuse me, is September 13th. Against the Falcons. All right, let's get back to our top story, though. We told you that Tom Brady, for the first time, competing in a full scrimmage with the Bucs in their stadium. And the Buccaneers quarterback heaped praise on his new wide receivers following the scrimmage.
Obviously, Mike and Chris set the tone for that group. But again, a lot like our tight end group, we have a really strong receiver group, guys that are really want to make plays. They're in the right spot. They're very selfless. I mean, I love my time with Mike. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him in a short period of time. Love working with Chris. You know, he was one of the first guys that I met when I came out here. So we're all developing a nice rapport, and us being around one another, learning, you know, different things about one another, just only develop trust, dependability, consistency. And then, you know, and then you, these guys, you know, you go to battle with and you compete hard with, and you gain a different level of love for them as people, because you see the way they compete and the way they treat people and the way that they, you know, the competitors they are on the field, and then, you know, what they do off the field with their families and the community.
So that's one of the big questions. Can Brady get this instant chemistry with those receivers? But Dan, there's also this Tom Brady effect that you sometimes hear former teammates speak of. How specifically do you think Brady will impact this entire Bucs team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Laura, Tom's going to impact the team on Sundays, right, on game days. But I can make the argument his impact will be even greater Monday through Saturday. My wife has a cousin who joined the military recently, and I remember speaking to him about it, and he was like, I accomplished things on a daily basis that I never knew I was capable of. And that's going to be what Tom Brady does for his teammates. Like, those guys are going to watch him work on Mondays and go, I didn't even know that I could prepare after the day after a game like that. On Tuesdays, I didn't know I could study that much film. On Wednesdays, I didn't know I could have that kind of focus, because the standard is going to be raised. And so, you know, he's going to play really well on game days. But everybody, not just the receivers, not just the O-line, the defensive guys, the coaches, everyone is going to be better because the urgency that he brings, and he's going to show them, you guys are able to do these things on a day-to-day basis. And all of a sudden, they're going to look back and go, wait, that's 3 weeks in a row that we did really good things, 21 straight days. And so his impact will be just as big Monday through Saturday as it is on game day.
I know we're all surprised here that Dan is just sunshine and roses about a quarterback. Mina, the thing is, the reality is that Brady and Arians have only had a short time together. What challenges do you think they will face for Brady in this offense?
The challenges are going to be present at first, and I think that's the real issue here. That's the negative, you know, aspect of this story. It's not going to be instantaneous. I like this Bucs team. I think they're a playoff squad, and I think the offense is going to be extremely productive. But they're not going to be the best iteration of themselves early on. And it's not for the reason you think. There's a lot of concerns right now about the merging of styles between Tom Brady and his quick passing game and Bruce Arians, who has this longer developing deep passing game. Last year, Jameis Winston led the NFL in average depth of target. Tom Brady actually had an average depth of target that was similar to Jameis's, over 10 yards, as recently as 2017 when the Patriots had Brandon Cooks. A lot of his game has been in New England was really a product of the receivers who are available to him. So I'm not worried about his arm, Laura. What I am more worried about is the offensive line. They're not terrible, but they're rolling into week one with a rookie right tackle. And that's going to be the difference here, right? Because if Tom Brady struggles, it's going to be because of the pressure he feels, not because of his arm.
Well, I mean, listen, Yeah, growing pains week one, but Mina, this they about to ball out. This is about to be stupid. This offense is going to be stupid, and they're going to make plays. And the one thing that people have to understand about Tom Brady doesn't get hit because of Tom Brady most of the time. He's getting the ball out. His timing with these receivers as they work through training camp and get to the season, I'm not worried about him standing back there and getting clobbered. There were times during New England years where there was this idea that this offensive line was great. But now Tom compensated for that by how fast he got the ball out. Trust me, I was on the other end of some of those 2-minute and 4-minute drives at the end of half. The second thing is when you look at what they have the ability to do, we talked about last year, he doesn't have any weapons. He can't do anything. We also know he won 12 games. And think about this too. Last year, Tampa won 7 games. And their quarterback threw 30 picks. Context, 30 picks, you should go 1-15. So this already a pretty good football team when you look at other parts of the game with a young defense that's coming along.
Guys, quickly, I want to get everyone's take here because obviously the Bucs and the Saints start the season out against each other. Dan, who ends up winning the division, though?
I believe the Bucs will win this division, and I know we've started this show to talk about Tom and the receivers, rightfully so. I think the Bucs win this division because their defense. You can make the case that their front seven is in the top three in the NFC. And Marcus, you just referenced those interceptions. If Tom throws half of that, this defense is already set up to play better. And so I think that because that defense is going to get better and better, the rush will be there. Those linebackers can run sideline to sideline. It's going to get that back end to play really well. And I promise you, Antoine Winfield Jr., their second-round pick out of the University of Minnesota, will be in the running for rookie defensive player of the year. So as much as I love Tom and the receivers, I'm going to take the Bucs to win this division on the backs of the defense.
Mina, what about you?
I like the Bucs defense. They had the best run defense in football last year. But you know what I like more? The Saints' continuity. I mentioned the Bucs have a rookie at right tackle. The Saints have arguably the best tackle combo in the NFL. They have a head coach and a quarterback who have mind-melded at this point. Dan, you know, continuity has never mattered more than it does this season, which is why I'm taking the Saints.
Marcus.
I'm taking the Bucs. We watched the Saints last year lose to Kirk Cousins in the playoff game with all of those snaps. I think back to Mike T and 13,000 snaps. Drew Brees and Sean Payton have been together forever. At the bottom line is this. When you get on that field, don't nobody care about how many snaps, continuity you got. It's about making plays. And the Tampa Bay Bucs could arguably make a statement right now saying they will be a team to make the most plays offensively in the NFL this year, and I think that's what's going to happen again.
We get to see this very soon, September 13th, Bucs against Saints. Brady was also asked about playing in front
I'm
of
hyped.
Empty stadiums.
Let's go!
We're so hyped. Lack of crowd noise. He couldn't help, Brady couldn't help it. He had to take a shot at a former rival.
I thought it was one of the Colts old tapes that when they used to pump all that sound in the RCA dome. So I think I was telling Coach Clyde, he must have pulled that one out of his basement for today's practice. So we had a great time with it. It was, again, something to get used to.
All right. So, Mina, all jokes aside, though, how will the lack of crowd impact their week one matchup with the Saints?
It's a huge deal, and it makes me waver a little bit in picking the Saints, but I'm sticking by it. I'm going with New Orleans, including in week one. I'd feel more comfortable if they had that tremendous home field advantage, but that rookie right tackle I alluded to earlier, Tristan Wirfs, he is thanking his lucky stars that it's going to be quiet when he goes into the Superdome. I'll tell you that.
I have a dream speech. You think about having this dream in your life, whether if it's the quality, whether if it's having the ability to do something in your life, because of him, because of so many other people that stood up for something special, it gives me a chance to play in the National Football League. It gives me a chance to do what I've always dreamed of. And so one of the things I always try to tell kids is dream big.
He was a trailblazer for so many reasons. He made this whole nation a better place to live.
On this day in 1963, hundreds of thousands of people gathered in Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington. It was, without a doubt, one of the most important civil rights demonstrations of the 20th century. It was the day Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech. Marcus Spears, everyone remembers the famous words that he uttered, but many do not remember that those words led to action. Why was it so important?
It was vitally important. Not only did the black community in America look to Dr. King for hope, but they looked to him for direction and understood that he was one of them that could get into certain areas and circles to voice the plight of the black people in this country. And you talk about the Voter Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, to come after that speech, which had a direct correlation to him gathering on that mall in D.C., and delivering what I believe to be one of the greatest speeches of all time. And he has a few more that stand in there as some of the greatest speeches of all time. But not only just delivering and giving people hope, giving them direction, making America stand up to the promises that it had granted all citizens, supposedly, to the right of liberty and the pursuit of happiness, the speech defined what needed to be done in this country in order for everybody to have equality. Black people needed to be treated the same as every other citizen, and that's what it led to. Unfortunately, it had to be laws enacted for black people to be respected as the same in this country that are actually still on the books till this day and standing strong to create that. But that's what Dr. King's speech led to, and a lot of the action that he took led to as well.
Yeah, it was also a great time for making real law that led to equality in the workplace, too, for black people and African Americans in America. All right, in a time when it seems like organizations sometimes rush to make statements just to get something out there, the statement that the Baltimore Ravens put out yesterday was markedly different. It was player-led, their voices heard loud and clear by Ravens brass. And here's some of what the statement included. Very specific action. They asked for the arrest and charging of the police officers responsible for Breonna Taylor's killing and the shooting of Jacob Blake. They also demanded that Senator Mitch McConnell bring the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act to the floor of the Senate. They are asking for prison sentencing reform that is fair and equitable. And lastly, they are encouraging every citizen to act with respect and compliance when engaging with police. John Harbaugh shared more today.
This is the players' statements and the assistant coaches that were involved in it, you know, and you can't control somebody else's thoughts and beliefs. And the players felt strongly that they wanted to do something together, and we had very knowledgeable assistant coaches who were involved in that. I started the meeting, that part of it, then I stepped away from it, you know, and trusted them. And I think when you empower somebody, it's because you trust them and you believe in them. And what they came up with, not everybody's going to agree with every point in that statement. Not everybody on our team probably is going to agree with every aspect of it. But the ability to respect one another's opinion and come up with something together that's workable that we could go forward with, I think is kind of a good example about how you work every problem.
Mina, let's start with you. What did you make of the Ravens statement?
This absolutely floored me when I saw it. I just want to remind you guys, if you've forgotten, 3 years ago, this organization considered signing Colin Kaepernick, and the owner, Steve Bisciotti, said not only that he didn't like his protest, which of course was about many of the issues we're discussing today, he asked people to pray for the team. And I bring this up not to single out the Ravens. I mean, they're one of the few teams that even looked at Kaepernick, but just to marvel out how far we've come, how far the NFL has come. This might be the most specific, powerful, impactful statement I have ever seen from an American sports team. I'll say that. I mean, just read the details, the legislation, calling for an end to qualified immunity and to no-knock warrants and chokeholds. These are the answers that people have been looking for. There are a lot of teams around the NFL wondering, what should we do right now? Our players want change, but what kind of change can we actually call for? The Ravens just gave you a playbook. And unlike their actual playbook, which you probably can't replicate because you don't have Lamar Jackson, you can take this one and run with it.
Yeah, Dan, one of the things that you heard Harbaugh mention there as well is that this was player-led. How impactful is just knowing that?
That's a huge deal, Ruddy. I would say this. A lot of times when you sit down with owners, they'll kind of express to you how they want their football team run. This is who we are. This is how we're going to do things. This is how we will represent ourselves, which is great. In 2011, I played for a head coach, Jim Caldwell, and I remember it was the first time I heard him say, or a coach say, players, this is your football team, right? I think this is the first example of an NFL organization going, players, this is your organization. In this situation, this is your organization. And it seems like the players went to ownership and Steve Bisciotti said, listen, I'm an open book. Utilize the power that I have. Utilize the money and the funds that I potentially have. Tell me what you guys want done. And I can't imagine how those players feel walking into Baltimore today. After this statement's released, if I'm a Baltimore Ravens player, I'm walking in so energized and encouraged and proud to put on those colors, proud to know that my owner is walking side by side with me. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, let us not love by words and speech, but with action. And Steve Bisciotti and the Ravens have been very clear. This is about action, and it's awesome to see.
Yeah, Dan, that's great. I totally love what you just said. I want to go back to something Mina said about the process, right, of what Bisciotti said 3 years ago and where they are now. This is the power of conversation, understanding, empathy, and then action. That's what protests are about. That's what these conversations that are uncomfortable are supposed to be about. It's a process for people that don't necessarily understand what's transpiring in communities of color. So when you think about what this statement means, this statement is almost, not only does it say what the action needs to be, it almost brings to the forefront of how these conversations are supposed to evolve and become something that you can actually put out tangibly to try to get things change. And it reminds me of this as well. I had a brief stint, a cup of coffee, as people like to say, with the Baltimore Ravens. And Ozzie Newsome was the general manager. And we all know the history of Ozzie and how great he was and the things that he did as a player and a general manager in this league. And we should give Ozzie his flowers as much as possible because he did a tremendous job. And you look at his last draft with drafting Lamar Jackson. And I think about there are some parallels and some similar things that goes along with this. Lamar Jackson coming out of college. Well, he's a runner. He's a guy. The league, you need pocket passers. You need guys that stand in the pocket. The Ravens said, no, we're going to create a system around this guy so he can thrive and have success. You think about the process of what they just went through with Earl Thomas, a player-led thought that he no longer fit in the construct of that team. You think about all of these things that you see coming out of the Ravens, and to Dan's point, this is a player-driven team. And usually what that has symbolized to me for a long time in sports is that teams that let players have that voice, that freedom, that ability to create the work environment, they tend to have success.
Marcus, I have 10 seconds. Do you think that the other 31 teams follow suit like what the Ravens did?
I don't. I don't think everybody is on that same level. And unfortunately, to say, Laura, I wish they were, but I do believe it's a sort of pressure to those teams. And the ones that were either on the fence or planning on doing something, they are going to be stronger about what they come out with.
All right. More to come on this conversation and much more.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's get back to NFL Live and some news from the Eagles. The Eagles already have had to retool their offensive line a few times this offseason. On June 15th, they lost star guard Brandon Brooks for the season with a torn Achilles. Then, less than a month later, Philadelphia re-signed 9-time Pro Bowler Jason Peters on a 1-year deal. Just yesterday, the Eagles found out that their 2019 first-round pick and starting left tackle Andre Dillard would likely need to undergo season-ending surgery after tearing his bicep. not good. All right, so just to remind you, with the Eagles reshuffling their offensive line, Carson Wentz has had his fair share of injuries, including the concussion in 2019, the wild card round last year. One way or another, he's been injured for each of the Eagles' three playoff appearances since getting drafted in 2016. But it doesn't deter Dan from loving him so very much. Here's a reminder of that.
For the sake of the stupidity of this,
your quarterback analysis on Carson Wentz, it stinks, bro.
2017, he's third in the league. And last year, he's not in your top 100.
You have to actually watch the football games.
I am convinced that this list was made by Mina Kimes. Anybody who voted for this list needs glasses.
Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz.
The facts are.
Got a better completion percentage. He threw for 1,000 more yards.
Marcus Spears, who conveniently has a little bit of a back issue today. Keep that same energy when you're talking about Carson Wentz, Dan. Marcus, how's my energy now, bub?
Mina Kimes is behind this. And I will not stand for this buffoonery.
Dan, that's you love
best,
him. You
that's
love
the best him. 30 seconds of video all week, guys.
I wouldn't go that far. Let's move on then, since you said that. Dan, what would it take for you to end your man crush on Carson Wentz?
Maybe if he retired?
I wish I was in that studio.
Maybe if he retired? Like, what? I mean, we saw what happened last year. Like, how come everyone he just conveniently kind of forgets what happened last year? Listen, the injuries are not awesome. Obviously, losing one of the best guards in football and Brandon Brooks isn't good, and now Dillard out. But Jason Peters will play well. You got to cross your fingers if you're Phillies Eagles fans and go, man, play 16 games and stay healthy. Mailata's got to play really well for them. The reality is they just can't deal with another injury on their offensive line. But the great thing is they've walked this road before. They've gone on this journey. Last year, Carson Wentz did everything that he needed to with me, you, Marcus, Mina playing for them. So, of course, it's not ideal, but when you've experienced it once, it will give him confidence that he can go do this again. Not ideal, but he'll go do it again. I've got zero concerns with Carson Wentz. Fix your glasses. Fix your glasses all you want.
It's disgusting how much you love him. That's number one. The second thing is this, man. You talking about how depleted the receiving core was. We talking about the offensive line. You know what? Let me take y'all down a little football journey of a week when you preparing for a team. I was in a D-line room where we looked for somebody new, somebody susceptible to giving up hits on their quarterback. What's the worst thing that can happen to Carson Wentz? He takes hits. Because he's been injured, like Dan alluded to. And now you telling me that we have the potential of having two guys that cannot protect at the level in which you need to for a quarterback that has pretty much shown over his career that injuries are very valuable in his career thus far. And Dan wants us to believe that receivers being hurt is the same as guys up front being hurt that's going to protect Carson Wentz. Well, I'm going to tell you this. This was happening in Dallas defensive line room. Hey, coach, whoever the rookie is, whoever the backup is, whoever the guy that ain't played a long time, let me rush him in Washington, in the Redskins facility. Hey, whoever these new guys are, let me rush them. And not to mention in New York, whoever these new guys is, let me rush them. Carson Wentz is going to have the hardest time that he's probably had thus far in his career if he's playing with guys without experience. But yeah. Let Dan Orlovsky tell it. No, he don't need but him let and one damn receiver to win games.
Yeah, listen, to that point, Marcus, since entering the league in 2016, Wentz has been contacted on 355 offensive plays. That's fourth most of any quarterback in the NFL over that span. Mina, where are you on Carson Wentz? How high are you on him?
Well, a lot of that contact is self-inflicted, right, because he holds on to the ball and takes off with it and tries to do too much. Look, here's the thing. I want to address the slanderous comments made by my colleague Dan Orlovsky in that montage. I like Carson Wentz. I think he's a good quarterback. I think Dak Prescott was better last year, but I think he's good. I just don't want to adopt him like Dan. I have a healthy, normal appreciation of his abilities. And I think those abilities are fine if the offensive line stays healthy. And this is where I agree with Dan. Like, they're so lucky they signed Jason Peters because he was actually pretty good last year. I know he's getting up in the year. He's a future Hall of Famer, but he ranked ninth in pressures allowed. He'll be fine at left tackle. Matt Pryor will be fine at right guard. The problem is if one of those guys goes down, they are in trouble. Because here's what Carson Wentz needs to improve at this year. And Dan, I think you'd agree with me on this. Don't fumble. He leads the NFL in fumbles over the last 3 years, and air the ball out downfield. That's why the Eagles went out and got all that speed. He can't do that if he doesn't have protection. I'm not blaming him. And that's why I'm concerned just about the thinness of that offensive line.
I'm going to rip all of this up. First of all, Marcus, you're talking about, like, new guys. Like, the defensive lines are going to go, man, these guys. Jason Peters has played for 100 years. Mina's right. He was serviceable last year. They will be fine.
Exactly.
Hold on. Second of all, they ended the season without Lane Johnson. Their arguably best offensive lineman missed 4 games at the end of the year. The quarterback overcame it. Mina, I find it so rich that you tell me Carson Wentz needs to stop holding onto the ball when your favorite player in the world is Russell Wilson. It's what makes them great. It's their superpower. And yes, he needs to air the ball out. He needs to have guys that are faster than 4.5 or 4.6 to do that. They have that this year. You guys are already writing his eulogy. You guys did this last year. You guys did this last year, and it ended bad for you.
Did you address the fumbles, or did I miss that? I didn't hear you say the word fumble, but you probably addressed it. I just missed it.
Hold on a second. How many games did Philly win?
More than your team.
Oh, that's a cop-out.
More than your team.
I'm asking you, how many games did Philly win? Because you talking about a eulogy and all this, like
nine.
They went deep into the playoffs.
Nine. How
they
many
are
team?
In a worse
how many
position
games, how many
not
games,
having the people up front than they had last year.
How many games did the vaunted NFC East win that you referenced that their defensive lines were going to whoop up on them?
Hey, bro.
The NFC East struggled.
I'm not going crazy about a quarterback like you are.
All right.
You talking like he went to the NFC Championship.
We'll have this conversation again in December, just like last year.
Let me just say, Marcus and Mina are not in this studio with me. Dan is actually making me sweat with how crazy he's being over there with all of his actions with his arms and everything. I can't even begin to tell you guys. Glad you're with us on NFL Live. And yes, you are going to see Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform. He was in Raymond James Stadium earlier today scrimmaging. Brady was asked about heightened attention on racial injustice around the world post-scrimmage. Here's what he had to say.
You know, everyone, makes the choices, you know, that they feel are best for them. And I think everybody is very sensitive of everything that's happening. And I think the communication that we have on a daily basis about social injustice is important for all of us. So, just trying to continue to listen and learn to certainly the guys on my team and the guys that I connect with and, do as much as we can to help things going forward.
So that's Tom Brady, and the New York Giants opened the season on Monday Night Football, September 14th, against the Steelers. Yesterday, Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard said they're still thinking about how they'll make statements for change, but they're not ruling out potentially boycotting. Meanwhile, Russell Wilson was asked directly if he would consider boycotting if they had a game this week, and here's what he said.
Yeah, for sure. I think that just witnessing what happened to Jacob and everything else and all the things that have added up to this. It's devastating. It's truly devastating. I think for us as a team, for the Seahawks, we're definitely discussing, you know, what do we do next? How do we make a change? How do we cause, movement, and how do we make a difference? And we're in the midst of all that right now. And we don't have weeks and we don't have months. We don't have years to change it. We got to all do it together. We got to do it now. We need change now.
And as we've seen leagues around our country boycott for change, new now on NFL Live from ESPN Packers reporter Rob Domofsky, Billy Turner, who's an offensive lineman, clearly wants change as much, if not more than anyone, but said he doesn't think NFL players boycotting games is the right way to go. Quote, yeah, we could go out there and boycott football games. That's easy. What change is that going to bring? So, Mina Kimes, we heard there that Russell Wilson said if they were playing today that they would boycott. They wouldn't play the game. You are a Seahawks fan. How would you feel if Wilson boycotted a game?
Proud. I'd feel proud. I'm proud of him as a leader, proud of the team for taking a stand that would not be popular. I mean, if you're watching this right now, you probably root for a team. And in the NFL, we root for the jersey, right? You root for team-friendly deals and young players, and you're not really rooting for players the same way as perhaps in other leagues. But what these players want you NFL fans, everyone to understand is that they're more than jerseys. They're human beings. That's why they're doing this. They're asking you to recognize their humanity, their empathy for others in their own communities, and to put that humanity above football. There's not necessarily a right or wrong way to go about this, to go to what Billy Turner said, but if the players decide to go that route, I hope that fans have the grace to recognize why they're doing it. And Russell Wilson alluded to it. It's not just Jacob Blake. He mentioned it's the compilation of so many incidents before that. You know, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, the list is so long at this point. That's why they would be doing it. And I hope people would recognize that and accept it for what it is.
Yeah, I think what Mina just said makes all the sense in the world. Here's the thing, right? A point of contention should not be because people are trying to help people. Like, that should not ever be a point of contention in this country when you are doing something and sacrificing something for the greater good of everybody or a disenfranchised segment of this country. This country is all about trying to. The ideal of this country is all about trying to put everybody in a position to be able to pursue their dreams with the same things available that everybody else has. And we know that is not the reality. And that is what this protest, that is what potentially boycotting a game is bringing attention to. With that being said, when you look at this situation, I think it's important what Billy Turner said as well, and Mina alluded to it. There are different ways to go about this. There is no wrong way to go about what your idea of helping people move forward is, right? We will scrutinize, we will talk about the differences, and this person didn't do enough, this person didn't do enough. People that are doing something to promote change and further this ball down the field is important to every single movement of human rights. So, yes, I would applaud it, and I would applaud what other people do that doesn't involve a boycott of a game.
This is a big deal. I mean, it's a real thing for the NFL right now. I would say this, like, if I was Russell Wilson's teammate and Russell and the leaders of our team felt like that was the move to make, I'm walking with them. I'm with them. Russell, I have your back, and the rest of us are right there with you because we can't judge hearts. I would say also the NBA, right? The NBA paused their season, but now they've got a social coalition that's been created. They're going to get advertising in their game for civic duties. So that's, they've got some things moving forward. There's 29 billionaire owners in the NFL out of the 31 options. The Packers don't have an individual owner. There are funds and resources there. And so the players are going to go, much like we saw out of the Baltimore Ravens, and go, this is what we want. We need this out of you. And if the owners aren't going to meet them, then this could be the action that's taken by the players, and they're going to do it together.
Yeah, it will really be interesting to see what tone the other 31 owners, the other 31 organizations end up taking after the tone that the Ravens put out there. Marcus Spears saying earlier in the show that he doesn't think that everyone will be on the same page that way in the NFL.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tons of attention on Green Bay this year with Jordan Love backing up Aaron Rodgers, who is in the 35 and over club entering this season. Tom Brady, of course, leads everyone at 43 years old and 35 and over quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He's also won half of his 6 Super Bowl rings after turning 35. Important note there. Of the quarterbacks on this list, who would you ride with in 2020? That's our question right now, and we start with you, Marcus Spears. Who are you going with, 35 and older quarterbacks on that list?
Why is this even a question? It's Aaron Rodgers. Are you kidding me? Listen, a down year, 4,002 yards, 26 touchdowns, 4 picks, and a 95 QBR. That's what we said is a down year for Aaron Rodgers. He's more athletic than all of the other guys that's older than him, can still make plays off a whim, and let's not even talk about being able to throw the ball as well as any of these quarterbacks that's older than him. This is a no-brainer. And look, I know that everybody's going to talk about, well, this and that, and Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is the best 35 and older quarterback, and he might be the 4th or 5th best quarterback in the entire league. Man, please.
Yeah,
y'all know
here's
that.
Here's the thing. He's not alone. This isn't tennis. He doesn't get to play by himself. Like, you have to be dependent on what's around you. So I would take Tom Brady.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. I'm taking Tom Brady. Tom Brady has the best of what's around him. He's got the best of what is around him. He's got a top 6 receiver. He's got arguably 2 top 12 guys, one of the best duos. And that because, like, I'm taking Brady. You can take Rodgers. I love Aaron. Aaron is going to play good football. But to sit here and say he's going to be the best, Marcus, they don't have a number 2 receiver who's had 40 catches in a season. Like, that is no over 35 quarterback.
Who the better quarterback, 35 or older?
No over 35 quarterback is going
who's
to be asked to do more. Marcus, who's the more talented quarterback? Like, we don't live in a world where we could play the hypothetical game. I don't watch Game of Thrones because dragons aren't real. I don't play the pretend world. I play the real one. So, like, you can't sit here and just tell me he's going to be the best, but because he doesn't have people around him, he won't be better than X guy. I'm going to take Tom Brady. He's going to have the most help. He'll perform the best.
Just love Dan. I think he's too good for Game of Thrones, but tweeting about America's Got Talent last night, which I'm sure is a great show. Look, here's the thing. You guys are having 2 different debates. Who's the best quarterback? Who's in the best situation? I understand that. But the answer to both is Drew Brees. The Saints disrespect today. My goodness.
What?
A stat I love from Next Gen Stats, the NFL, is completion percentage over expectation. What they're doing is looking at what should a quarterback's completion percentage be based on, you know, whether the receivers are open, the pass rush, and how much did he exceed that? Drew Brees was 2nd in the NFL last year. These other names, Tom Brady was, I believe, 32nd. So, yes, he had worse receivers, but that doesn't explain that much of a difference.
Yes, it
does. It's Drew Brees.
Yeah, Drew Brees has also said he's going to work on throwing the deep ball a little bit more, so he might end up being even better than he already has been recently.
Am I in the Twilight Zone?
Marcus, did you fall out of your chair? I'm trying to figure out what happened in that moment.
Another great show.
Laura, am I in the Twilight Zone right now?
Yes.
What was the graphic? What did the graphic say?
Pop the graphic back up. Where's the graphic? Let's get it going again.
Over 35 quarterbacks.
Yes. Here it is. There's the graphic.
It's the better quarterback, 35 and over club entering this season. Who is the better quarterback is the question Laura asked. And both of y'all gonna sit here and tell me it ain't Aaron Rodgers.
Because I look at it in reality,
face.
Marcus. I look at it, you can't, like, yes, if you're gonna tell me who's the most talented out of that group,
literally,
it is still Aaron Rodgers, yes. But Big Ben's gonna have a top 3 defense. Drew Brees has probably got the most complete team. Brady's got the best wide receiver duo of that group. And who's the other 35-year-old that I'm thinking? Phillip Rivers is going to have the best offensive line in football. So, like, Rodgers is going to be asked to do the most again.
Hey, what, Marcus? Go.
I'm going to ask Miss Drew Brees, Mina Kimes, who played in the NFC Championship last year?
Listen, Marcus. It's
evaluating
quarterbacks
the question,
requires more than just looking at a single game. Football is a team sport. I'm sorry. Find me a number in which Drew Brees was worse than these guys last season.
Wait! Y'all told me Aaron Rodgers was devoid of talent, He don't have the guys around him this year, and he the only damn quarterback that played in the NFC Championship.
Marcus.
You know who didn't? Drew Brees didn't. You know who else didn't? Tom Brady didn't.
That's because he plays in the AFC.
Aaron Rodgers played in the NFC Championship.
Go back and watch that championship game, though,
wouldn't have gave up 7,000 yards rushing to the 49ers, they might have won that game.
I'll bet you a new pair of glasses that the Bucs and the Saints both have better records than the Packers this year.
All right, fun fact about the glasses is neither one of them actually has a prescription, neither Marcus nor Dan, for their glasses. Hey, we've been here for a while today, but we've got one more thing to get to before we go. We're going to begin with Marcus. What's your one more thing?
I think he wants to keep going.
Oh, my one more thing is, look, Jordan Love, his coach came out and gave him praises today, and that's what I'm talking about, coaches. Praise your young quarterbacks, even though they look terrible in practice. It does not go good for the psyche of these young guys if you blast them in the media.
My one thing is going to be that the Cincinnati Bengals have already found their future leader and quarterback for the next 15 years, and he hasn't even taken a snap yet. The leadership, the understanding of his role, the courage to stand out front and be the leader of that organization by Joe Burrow this week has been absolutely incredible. Cincinnati, you've got your guy.
All right, I gave Drew Brees a lot of love, so I'm going to give love to the divisional opponent, the Bucs, but not Brady, the Bucs defense. Third in weighted DVOA last year, best run defense in the NFL, held opposing running backs to the lowest yards per carry. They are a force to be reckoned with. We should talk about them as much as we talk about Drew Brees, Tom Brady.
Hey, guys, guess what? With 13 days away for the NFL season, Jaguars offensive tackle Ryan Pope, now the only NFL player on the league's COVID-19 reserve list. So great news. Good job by the NFL. Everyone taking it seriously and staying safe. We'll see you next week. Around the Horn is next.